Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth's series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Hi everyone, Maren here with my other half of IndieBirth, Margot. Yay, so excited that Margot's on this podcast today.
Yay!
Margot has her own series of podcasts now on iTunes called...
Well, actually...
So check for those. We haven't done one together, though. So we have these two separate series kind of going, which we hope you're enjoying. But we wanted to get together today to talk about reflections of a birth that occurred about a year ago. And that was Celosia's birth.
And it's hard to believe that it's really been a whole year. And I guess if you haven't been following along, that's my daughter.
In case she's not famous to everybody. Oh, boy. Well, today, like I said, we just wanted to chat about this birth that is obviously so important to Margot and super special to me. Thought we'd just kind of chat, let you in on it, hear how it goes. If you'd like to read Margot's actual birth story, we will link to that below this podcast, and you can find it just on the IndieBirth site anyway. And then there is a YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Video of Celosia being born. And it's an amazing, inspirational home birth video that's been viewed... How many times?
Nearly 100,000 times at this point.
And what's it called? Although we'll put the link, I guess.
I think it's called Celosia's Birth, and then in parentheses, short.
Cool.
I think I had intended to put out a longer one at some point, because as you'll hear, it was quite a long affair. So there's a lot of footage, but the video itself, I think, is only 4 or 5 minutes long. From just maybe a minute or so before she's born to a minute or two after she was born.
Yeah, great footage from that birth for sure. I guess it being long definitely had its advantages. So if you haven't watched that video, maybe watch it and or read the story before you continue listening to us. That way you have some kind of background, since we probably won't be rehashing the whole birth story. More just how Margot's feeling now, a year afterwards. So where shall we start?
Well, I guess since we were just talking about the video, I could say a little bit about that. And sort of all the media around her birth that I have. So I have a fair amount of photos from her birth. There was a slideshow at one point, which I've been meaning to recreate. It had been reported on YouTube.
Oh, dear.
Because someone was offended about how graphic the photos were. They were real excellent.
Birth. Yeah. Yes.
So maybe I'll be able to put that up again, and we can link to that, too. So, yeah, my husband knew that that was important to me for personal reasons as well as for more public educational reasons. So he made sure to take a lot of photos. You know, we had the cameras charged up for probably weeks and weeks before the actual birth. And we borrowed a tripod from someone so that we could get some video. And it just was really sort of lucky, I think, that we even got the video.
Yeah, you were just in the right place with the camera.
Yeah.
In the right place and wasn't like a big... production.
Yeah, and I think my husband sort of, he had turned it back on. He had turned it off and on so many times through the course of the few days that I think it just, yeah, we lucked out that he had turned it on and left it on, even sort of as we thought maybe we would be transporting or something. And I was still in the same place that I had been when he had set it up. And yeah, and then Maren moved the tripod for us, I think. Yes, after she was born, after a few minutes, so that there was a better view of really the first, I think it's 30 minutes of her life.
Oh, that's really sweet.
It's really sweet.
It's really sweet. I think I wish I had that
Yeah.
from some of my kids, especially when you were able to place it in a way that you probably didn't even remember it was on when that was all going on.
I had no idea that it was on. I thought, I mean, it just wasn't even in my brain at that point.
Yeah, that's perfect.
And so you can even see all the way through having, you know, birthing the placenta. And we've used that footage now sort of privately in our, what are we calling that course? The afterbirth.
The postpartum hemorrhage course. Yeah, great teaching materials. Mm-hmm. So many people could be grateful for Margot's experience caught on film. And again, I think it just worked out perfectly. You know, I don't know that so many people think ahead of time they want to see a video, but I think you're a great example of if you're open to it, mm-hmm. just set it up and remind someone else to turn it on, because it's not something the birthing woman seems to notice or think about. And then, of course, that's your footage. You don't have to share it with anyone. But I think it's really sweet that her very first breaths were captured for her to watch. That's mm-hmm. crazy.
I know. It's pretty amazing.
And in such a, like, loving, gentle way, I think that could really influence a kid to see that.
Yeah. I think it's definitely influenced, you know, family and friends too, who maybe weren't fully on board or understanding where I was at with, you know, the work that I do and, you know, why it means so much to me. And I think it, you know, really made an impact, especially for, I know for like my own mom, to be able to see that. I remember watching it with her probably when Celosia was 2 weeks old so.
I didn't know she saw it.
Yeah. I was like, do you want to watch the birth video? And we like, I think we watched more than, you know, the section that's on YouTube. We watched some more before and some more after.
Really cool.
And she just cried and was amazed. And, you know, I think it was really healing for her just to see what birth can look like and reflect on her own experiences and feel like her granddaughter was born in this really peaceful, loving way.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's why even on YouTube it has almost 100,000 views. You know, there's tons on there that might be labeled home birth or unassisted birth, but I think people are pretty used to seeing the same type of births that they see at the hospital. So, you know, just more interventions and maybe someone else receiving the baby, not the mom or dad, even when they're home births. And that footage serves a different purpose, I think, but yours is just so raw and beautiful. And seeing Russell catch her, you know, just mm-hmm. having no one else's hands touch her, that goes such a long way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really special.
Yeah.
So, what are you thinking a year later? Is it like a haze, you know, every moment of the birth? Or are there some concrete things that always pop into your head when you think about it? Or, I don't know, specific memories you're left with? I mean, I know it's all, you know, a good memory, but.
Yeah, I just sort of, you know, right before we started this, we were talking about maybe what to talk about. And I said to Marin, you know, it just feels like this really big thing. Like in my brain, it feels almost like a textbook or something, or, you know, like I replay so many parts of it in my mind and like I could think about it all day long as an experience. And I think, again, like just having the media that I have of the experience has shaped how I think about it. Having the photos that I have in a, you know, their dates and time stamped has helped me put the story together in a way that I couldn't have done without that. And so yeah, part of it feels like it's sort of a reconstruction, like when I try and think about it logically. But when I think about it just more outside of my brain, yeah, it feels very hazy and sort of, I don't even know. I'm just so amazed what we're capable of doing. And like, not to be like, I'm amazed by myself, but.
Well, you should be. And that's definitely, I know in wanting Margot to talk about that here was certainly one of my intentions. She doesn't have to talk about how great she was and is, but I can. because I think it's so important that, especially for women having their first babies, that they hear these kind of stories, that they understand labor and birth can look a lot of different ways, and it's not always what we expect. And these are all huge issues, by the way. but then the last thing that always is very prominent in my mind when I think about Celosia's birth is that Margot took so much responsibility during her pregnancy. And I know that's what we talk about here at Indie Birth. Like, that's what our classes are based on, that birth does work a certain way. But to prepare ourselves for that experience, we have to own it along the way. And I just can't say enough about what a beautiful example Margot was of that. Because then, you know, when you do get to challenges in your labor or birth, you already know what it feels like to be the decision maker. And, you know, that doesn't mean everything works out the way you want it, but there's so much power in that, just knowing that you knew enough about yourself. So that's, I think, just so important for people to hear. It's not just about the birth.
Right. Yeah, I feel in so many ways like the pregnancy was sort of practice for then my birth experience. And I think I have sort of a unique, you know, not necessarily super unique, but sort of at least perspective, yeah, and had a pretty unique experience just with the challenges that I had during my pregnancy, you know. And when we talk in this world of unassisted birth or undisturbed birth and, you know, holistic sort of, you know, a holistic approach to pregnancy and birth, a lot of times the focus is on really uncomplicated pregnancies and uncomplicated births. And sort of, I feel like the more challenging aspects or experiences sometimes get glossed over or ignored, or, you know, maybe someone has a reason for it. Like, oh, you had a hard birth because you had someone there who was telling you what to do, or, you know, like, we get very, like, occasionally I see this in the, especially the unassisted birth community, like, if you do it perfectly, then you'll have this perfect undisturbed birth. So I think I had a unique experience in that way, at least, in that, you know, I really did have, like, a 100% self-directed pregnancy and birth, and it didn't turn out just super simple and straightforward, and that's okay. And I think that what I learned from that was really amazing and powerful, and I think will help other people who have, you know, some people call them butter births, you know, like super simple, easy births. So that I think I can help people now who don't have that experience even more. Yeah, and I have intentions, and I've had intentions of writing more posts about my pregnancy experience. I have what someone might call chronic hypertension, which, you know, would have gotten me labeled high risk if I went to an OB.
Or a midwife.
Yes, a licensed home birth midwife in Arizona would not have been allowed to help me. So, yeah, I had to do a lot of research and a lot of educating myself, and had to face a lot of fears and go up against a lot of belief, even amongst the holistic crowd and the midwifery crowd, that, you know, I was a dangerous person for doing what I was doing, and really had to be sort of almost alone in that belief and feel confident in it, which I didn't 100% of the time.
Well, and that's part of it too, I think, is people hearing that challenges are challenges, and it's how you find your way through and what works for you to process that challenge. You know, I think, again, in the unassisted world, there's not as much focus on maybe people educating or learning. It's more just, you know, do you trust everything's going to be okay? And that's one way of doing it. But another way of doing it is meeting those challenges with as much information as you can, and then working through that and, you know, taking what people say or do and maybe leaving some and taking some. And I mean, it's a really complicated puzzle. It's not, mm-hmm. it's not, like you said, as easy as somebody that just has a really simple pregnancy and doesn't come up against anything at all. I mean, those births are great. Those unassisted pregnancies are great. But I think you'd say that the challenges probably helped you, you know, face right. Birth and mothering, because that's what it's all about.
Totally. Yeah. And it, yeah, just like you said, challenges are totally challenges, or they wouldn't be called that. Like, I remember so many times, even before I was pregnant, but it seemed like it happened so much more frequently when I was pregnant, you know, reading in different midwifery groups, or, you know, I'm involved in the unassisted world as well as, in, you know, midwifery and traditional birth attendant circles, and people talking about which clients were okay to take, and, you know, just discussions cropping up all the time about, you know, and it's like anything where if you start thinking about something, you start seeing it everywhere. But I felt like I just kept seeing, like, oh, I'll take just about anyone except for if they have high blood pressure, or, you know, and so I kept getting this feedback, I felt like, from the outside world that, like, you know, everything is totally fine. You know, I'll do a breech baby, we'll do VBACs, we'll do twins, but, oh man, if someone has high blood pressure, like, no way. And so I felt like I had to sort of reconstruct, like, an entire reality almost to, like, base my trust in. And, like I said, it wasn't 100% there, I don't think, at all, until after the birth when everything was fine. But, yeah, it was definitely a struggle. And I think that that's something people can take away, is just that you have to be the one who believes that you're making the right choice. And it really doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. You can build that trust and build that foundation for yourself. And then, like Maren was saying, that totally translates into birth and mothering. And yeah, I think that it did in so many ways help me just feel more confident, because I think that's been the hardest part so far for me. And just knowing that I could do that and create that space for myself has made the rest seem much easier, even when I've had challenges there too.
Yeah, it's not a small thing to go against the grain that way. You know, like you said, even in midwifery or holistic circles,
Going against the grain of the grain.
And so not to, like, diminish that, but yet so many women can see themselves kind of like in a mirror. You know, whatever your thing is, whether you've had a cesarean, whether you have a breech baby, right? Like, or something else that really is only important to you, or something that brings you fear, it doesn't matter. Like, it feels the same in our bodies, I think. So I guess I'm just saying that women out there, no matter what your thing is, you can use Margot as a role model, you know, to kind of combine what she did, which is lots of research. And I mean, I saw, you know, a good percentage of it, definitely not all of it, but I was so impressed and continue to be with her questioning. And I think that's something we all should do no matter what our issue is, you know, and breech baby is a great example. Like, okay, people are saying this, this is what we're told to believe, but when it's you, you really got to do more than that. And when you really start to dig with most of these issues, you realize, like you said, you kind of have to reconstruct your reality, because the research reality is not your reality. Really? I mean, that's just research. You have to create your own beliefs based on what you know and what you feel. And only you can come up with that. It's both like a blessing and a curse, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah. And even, you know, like you said, research is just research. But, you know, as you know, even when you start digging into the research with most of these things, it has no basis for what most people think about the topic. It's really amazing. It's sort of like the more you dig there, and then also, you know, in your own self and like how you're feeling and what you believe, the sort of myth behind all of this just falls apart, you know, and you come back to, I just remember thinking so much during my pregnancy about what is risk. you know, what is safety, and these sort of bigger cultural questions and philosophical questions about, like, what do these things mean, and, like, what amount of risk is acceptable to me, and then going beyond that, thinking, you know, if the risk is, if we could quantify it even, you know, what amount is acceptable, and then what does it matter? Because if you're that percentage, then that's what happens to you. And if you're not, it's not. And there's nothing we can do to control that. And, you know, everyone who's having a baby is taking a risk.
You're taking a risk if you're not having a baby.
Right.
You're taking a risk, like, getting up out of bed and, like, getting in your car every day.
Yes, exactly. So,
yeah.
So it's just, it's just all so, it's a big thing. I spent a lot of hours.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Possibly too many hours, but...
No, not too many. I mean, because, well, there isn't an end at this point, but I think so many women will be helped by the research you've done and the knowledge you have, because like you said, hypertension is a big scary thing out there. And once you really start to look at it, I think even on a basic, like truly holistic level, and I know this stuck with me from just being around you, well, what can you do? Like with any risk or complication, like what are our basic tools? And I know for you, and I agree, like, what are you eating? Mm-hmm. You know, that was like the number one thing, because it looked like a lot of the risks for women with high blood pressure, you know, they were really looking at women that weren't taking care of themselves and nourishing themselves. And so just coming back to really basic knowledge like that, no matter who you are, like, okay, I am in control of how I treat my body this pregnancy, what I feed my baby, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do the best I can. And, you know, a lot of it, we just don't have control over.
Totally.
Yeah. So many good topics in there. So what other lessons or maybe just wise words would you leave someone? Maybe they're preparing for their first birth and don't know what to expect. Where do you go with that?
I feel like the theme, and I just wrote a post that I haven't published yet, but the theme of my like pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience so far feels like, even when we do these things that we know are biological and we know are physiological, like that doesn't mean they're going to be easy. Mm-hmm. And maybe I sound really bitter about it, but.
Well, I think that's the truth. And that's your truth. And I think that's better than, you know, us acting like it's all simple right. and blissful, because that doesn't really help a large percentage of women. Right. I mean, because when it's simple and blissful, then you're not looking for help.
Right.
You're fine.
Yeah.
But what about everybody else?
I just always feel like the bearer of bad news or like a Debbie Downer or something when I think about like just that question. Like, what would you say? You know, and we have to grapple with this in a very real way when
sure.
we teach our class, you sure. know, locally and online. We did the online class, at least the latest recording, before I had had a baby.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to listen to that one and when we
well, your life, your life is completely different before and after.
Yeah. So I don't know. I had a really unique experience, I think, of having gone to births for over 3 years before I had Celosia. And so I got to see women have babies, you know, a lot of different women in different places in their lives, a lot of women having their first babies, long labors and short labors and
everything in between,
water births and not water births. And so I feel like, you know, I was more prepared than most anyone really can be, you know.
Well, just for the variation, which we don't get to see, most and, women never see anything.
Right. I got to see so much in real life stuff. And I think that's where so much of my confidence came from, was that, you know, I saw women get through it and I knew I could do it. I saw it and I visualized it. And, you know, I always say, like, the first birth that I ever went to, I was always so dumbfounded when a baby actually came out. Like, I could not believe that was happening. And then as I went to more, it was like a thing I would have to tell myself when we got to a labor was like, a baby's going to come out. Like, don't
it's
forget.
Unbelievable.
That's going to happen.
Yes, it's unbelievable.
That's why we're here.
No matter where you are.
So I think there's something to be said about, you know, if we return to something that was more like our ancestral sort of roots, if women grew up as girls, mm-hmm. even seeing births, I think it would definitely change the way that we birthed because, sort of as I'm getting to the point, you know, I had a very challenging labor, and I don't think I could have done it if I hadn't seen other women do it. I don't think that I could have in my brain been like, no, a baby is going to come out. Like, you don't know what it's going to feel like yet, because that I hadn't done, but I had seen it happen,
mm-hmm.
so I knew it was possible.
Mm-hmm.
So in those moments when it felt impossible, you know, there was that in the back of my head, like, you've seen dozens of women do this before.
Yeah.
Whereas if someone had never seen it happen, I can see very easily why maybe they would start to doubt that after 3 days.
But. Yeah, totally. And that wraps back around to, you know, even why watching birth at this
right.
given time and place is important. I mean, really, women aren't probably going to go out and see live
right.
births, but yeah, watching good birth videos because...
And talking about it and...
Yeah, there's only so much... relaying of information I think we can do because our experiences are so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can share the stories, but just seeing it and feeling that in the room or seeing it on video, I guess, not quite the same, but you know.
It's similar.
Yeah, allows women to realize that that is what happens and it's going to happen.
Well, it's like magic. I mean, I remember my whole life, even after I had seen women have babies, be like, how is a head going to come out of there?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that that's a stupid question. You know, when people are like, really? Like, how does this work? I'm like, you know, I kind of don't. I mean, we know the physiology and we know the vagina
is
rugated and it can stretch widely in the bones. But it's crazy. It's amazing and crazy.
Well, and you can see it hundreds of times and it's not any more ordinary in
mm-hmm.
a sense. It's always, there's that element of disbelief. And I know Gail Hart has talked about this, or I've talked about it with her, that even midwives feel that way. You know, it's not an uncommon feeling to just have that, what's going to happen next? Is the baby really going to come out feeling? Because it's that crazy.
It's magical.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I would say, especially for someone the first time, is just find the most ways that you can to just believe that it will happen.
And see it happening.
See it happen for other people. Visualize it happening for yourself. I spent so many hours visualizing, you know, just like as I was feeling the baby. And I was sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Superstitious about it. I didn't visualize it very much until, you know, we were closer to being term. Because I didn't want the baby to get any funny ideas about being born too soon or something. I don't know. But
well, have to be careful with your visualizations.
Yes, you must be careful. But, you know, just visualizing her being in the perfect position and her little arms down. And for the most part, as far as we could tell, she was in a pretty good position. Maybe I'd be a little more specific next time about, like, being lower. But, you know, and coming out and being pink and breathing right
mm-hmm.
away. And she
mm-hmm.
did. And, yeah, so it just, I think, paid off and in a lot of ways. And yeah, I think the first time is just different because I know going into a future birth, if I ever have another baby, like I will remember that feeling. I'll have the benefit of having seen other people
sure.
have babies, and then I'll also have the benefit of
sure.
knowing for certain that I can do it
sure.
and know what it feels like and know what to expect in that way, which
yeah.
is different.
I mean, confidence goes a long way, which is why usually subsequent births are easier, although, I mean, they can be really different, so
sure.
that's a whole other topic. But yeah, confidence in general. So that, again, I think is why it's so important that we, as a culture, kind of get to these women that are having their first
mm-hmm.
babies, because as we all know, you know, how many of them are likely to have a surgical birth when their birth doesn't look like a textbook, which yours certainly didn't.
Right.
So I just feel like you're one of the poster children for, you know, not home birth at all costs by any stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, there was lots of give and take, you know, all around. And and all that. So, but birth doesn't have a map.
No map.
No map comes.
Yeah, I've had so many people, maybe not so many people, but a good handful of people in the last year. You know, I talk about my birth story a lot because
it's a great story.
Like everyone
read
talks.
It.
Yeah. You know, I think everyone, or a lot of people, talk about their birth stories, but I do even more, I think, just in the context of what we do and who I am and what an oversharer I am. And
no,
so
there's such practical
yeah
lessons that it's impossible to not share them.
Right. So so where I was going with that was, you know, there's people that I've come into contact with who will be talking about birth and they'll be sort of telling me their story. I had someone tell me, I think I had said, I had my baby at home, which is particularly interesting where we're located. We're at a trout farm. So people know the trout farm and, you know, we live in this funny little trailer at the trout farm. And so it's sort of interesting that my baby was born there. Because
very unique. Not many babies can say that.
Only a couple. Uh-huh. And so it's sort of a story and it's a very small community. And so I had mentioned it to someone like, oh, my baby was born at the trout farm. And so she started telling me her birth story and how, I had to have a cesarean because I was in labor for 48 hours. And I just wasn't dilating past a 5 or whatever the story was. I can't remember the exact details, but I had a cesarean and then I had cesareans for the next 4 or 2 or something, like mind blowing. And then, you know, I didn't say it to make her feel bad, but I said, I was in labor for about 66 or 67 hours. I said, it doesn't sound that abnormal to me that you were in labor that long. And it sounds like you were doing a great job for the first time. And, you know, she got really defensive and, but I think it made her think about it. And again, it wasn't said to make her feel bad, but it's interesting to now have my own story to share, to sort of combat these myths that we have out there. And then on the other side, I've shared the story with people and, most recently, just maybe a week ago or a couple weeks ago. And the person said, well, isn't it dangerous to be in labor that long? Like that can't be good for the baby. Like said this to my face after I shared my birth story. And I was, first of all, a little like, wow, I was glad to have the conversation, but I was a little taken aback that they had sort of the confidence to say such a thing. And, I don't know that the full, impact of the story got through to them, but it was a teaching moment, I thought. And uh-huh. I said, you know, no, I was listening to the baby throughout labor. You know, this idea that labor is stressful to the baby or hurts the baby or, you know, these things have to be challenged. And, it's so ingrained. This was like an older man who said this to me.
Well, people are scared.
Yeah.
I mean, they're scared of labor. They're scared of birth.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention it happening at home.
Right.
So, you know, although every home birth doesn't go as planned, that's not your story. And you have every right to share your story. It's not like you're just, you know, glossing over like, anybody can have a home birth mm-hmm. and you can be in labor for days. It's no big deal. Like you lived it
mm-hmm.
and you were faced several times with, okay, is this still a safe place to be? Is
right.
this where I want to be? Is this where my baby wants to be? So, you know, everyone's different, but I think for anyone that wouldn't guess that that's going on during a process where a woman is really taking responsibility for herself, you know, you have it wrong. These aren't most of the time women that just like cross their fingers and pray. They're very in touch and they're constantly weighing, you know, especially if it gets long or more complicated, are they still where they want to be? Do they feel like there's somewhere else to go? And that, you know, I think is such a blessing that we have for ourselves and our babies.
I think that's definitely something that I still think about, and I'm sure I will think about for a long time, is just like that moment. So if you haven't read, hopefully you've read the story, so you'll know which moment I'm talking about here, where we were listening to Celosia's heartbeat and we're like, that's pretty different than it was last time we listened. And I think that again, was a really awesome learning moment for me to be able to feel like what's happening and what do I want to do about this? And my initial reaction was definitely fear-based and was like, oh shit, like we got to go right now, which I would not terribly suggest trying to interpret fetal heart tones when you're in labor. That might be another lesson.
I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
So I think it's really, this sort of second point was that, I think it is really helpful to have someone there to support you and help you with those sort of more brain related activities if you're going to choose them. So I'm so grateful that I had someone else there, Miss Marin.
Well, I always say the same thing, which is I don't think we were meant to birth completely alone. I mean, that's fine if you choose it. You know, that's fine if you just have a partner there. I mean, it's all everybody's business. But yeah, there's something about having someone there that can give you a little bit of distance and a little bit of perspective. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, I could easily be seen as being emotionally involved because Margo's so special to me and this baby is so special to me. But still, you're not the person birthing, so you have that little bit of distance.
And your brain's not flooded with crazy hormones.
And it's just not meant to interpret those things. And the fear reaction, I think, is so normal in what any of us would have. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes there's something that needs to be done. But I think, like, the collective feeling in the room was like, let's just take a breath. And if this baby can be born soon, like, that seemed to feel like the right thing. I mean, Margo being the authority on that, but just kind of working with those feelings.
Yeah. And I think that was such an interesting lesson and sort of like the pinnacle. I mean, other than the birth itself, but I feel like that for me was one of the biggest emotional moments of the whole pregnancy and birth experience. For me, and I think it was an interesting lesson in that it wasn't something a number could tell me. Because I'm a very numbery kind of person. I like having that. And I like then extrapolating from that and combining it with intuition. And I like all of that, too. But, you know, I am a very analytical sort of person. And I spent, like I said, so many hours poring over obscure research and trying to quantify my risk of placental abruption and, you know, like these strange, I mean, not strange, but very detailed things. Like I would come up with 10 new questions every day that I'd then be like searching PubMed about. But so this moment that was probably like, to me, sort of the heaviest moment, like a, oh God, like at the deepest level, you know, the answer of like, what do I do? It wasn't something I could look up, you know, it wasn't something I could try and put a number on. It was like, I had to literally just like ask myself and check in with my gut and then literally like feel inside myself and be like, what's happening and what do I want to do? And have the choice come from that instead.
Well, there's no person that could know otherwise.
Right.
You know, I don't care how long you've been a midwife or what sort of doctor, you know, you are, anybody only has like a certain ability with the numbers anyway. And so, unfortunately, that's how most decisions in birth are being made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not because there's truly a problem, just because there's a chance of a problem and there's a number that on some chart, you know, and people just do that. Right. So it's no small feat. I mean, I don't even think, I don't know, I guess you do realize, but it's no small feat to have that kind of thing happen in your own birth and to have to just find that spot within yourself. I mean, there's no amount of like drawing out of you someone else can do.
And it wasn't like a pretty moment, like in the story, I think.
It never is.
No, it was a very raw, like, animal sort of moment. And in the story, I think I said, and I'm sure other people wouldn't share this about themselves, but like I stuck my finger like in my butt.
Yeah.
And because I felt like I had to poop, which of course in my brain I was like, that's what everyone says before the baby comes.
Sure.
But then part of me was like, there's no way, like this has taken so long, it's never gonna end. Like that can't be real. And so it was sort of out of like spite almost. It was like, that can't really be true. So I felt, and then I was like, oh, that's a head in my butt.
Totally.
And that totally shifted things for me. And that's not something, you know, like a doctor would tell you to do, or, you know, even a midwife, like a,
you know like, what though? It makes me think of like many birth stories actually, where mm-hmm. there is that pivotal moment mm-hmm. and I don't know why it manifests often as fear. I think it's just our culture. Mm-hmm. And again, there's a tiny percentage where there's actually a problem.
Sure.
But in most of the births we see, at least, that pivotal moment doesn't mean there's really a 911. Mm-hmm. It means it's like the moment that the woman identifies with what's actually going to happen.
Right.
And it's scary.
It's really big. It's a head in your butt.
It's really big. And yeah. Yeah. I think it's an interesting thing to think about, you know, all the births. I mean, and it looks different for everybody.
Sure.
It's not always like a panic, but I don't know. Maybe it's part of that fetal ejection reflex
totally.
In some, you know, looking lots of different ways.
Yeah.
Where a woman needs that adrenaline to just finish
Get
it
the
off.
Job,
yeah. Baby. Just have the baby.
And then I think just thinking about it, you know, it's just another moment where I think I could make the case, and it's not for every woman at all, but like I did that and then I felt like, okay, this is real. But then it helped me a lot to be like, no, Maren, you feel too. Cause I was still in disbelief, like, no way. Like, is that really happening? And Maren, of course, tried to be like, oh no, like that's wonderful and keep going. And I was like, no, you're feeling now.
Well, when you've been in labor that long, not to mention that you had never felt those sensations before, like I said, I think if we all had someone to trust the first time, I mean, mm-hmm. I know for me, it would have made a world of difference.
Yeah.
Because what's wrong with looking for assurance that this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. I mean, every single time
yeah.
I've said to whoever's there, whether it's you or it's been another friend, it's the same moment when I say something along those
it's
lines. I can't do this. This baby isn't coming.
Right.
And then the baby comes.
Yeah.
So I don't think looking for reassurances, I think it's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It is. It's such a big moment. And how can you wrap your head around it, really?
Mm-hmm.
You can't.
Yeah. See, we had no shortage of things to say.
And I'm sure we could keep going. One last thing I wanted to add, just because it's such a great thing to keep in mind, especially for women maybe having their first baby, is that attention to keeping yourself like physically able to do the labor. I think you're the poster child for that. And, you know, I think being aware of it in your head is the number one thing. You had the benefit of seeing many women either feed themselves really well during labor or the opposite. You've seen lots of women too, not able
mm-hmm.
to eat or drink and truly become unable to birth at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what you can say to drive that home to people that haven't been
mm-hmm.
this way yet, but it's so important. You know, it's not just, well, you can talk about it. I guess it's not just like an intuitive thing that you think people will know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating thing.
I don't
know
why it's not.
Yeah. I don't know either. I mean, for me, like Maren said, I had seen it go both ways, and I knew that I needed to like minimize as many other like variables that could go wrong as possible to, and so that was.
It's back to food as the basis again.
Back to food as the basis. And I had the benefit, and I would encourage other people to sort of cultivate this too. Just, I had the benefit of a really supportive partner in that pursuit of like, kind of to an obnoxious point even.
But that's a great thing for partners.
Good.
Yeah. It's
yes.
a great job for them to have. It's very like, very easy to do
mm-hmm.
in a way and hands-on. Just feed the woman.
Feed the woman.
Yeah.
And he was really good about it. I mean, as long as I was able to, which was like, you know, I went into labor on late Saturday night, and I think until late Monday night, I pretty much ate my normal food.
Yeah, she was amazing.
Like full meals 3 times a day and then lots of snacks in between. And you know, I didn't eat a ton, I don't think, at night, which kind of makes sense just because it's nighttime. But I did snack throughout the night, too, those nights when I wasn't, you know, I wasn't able to sleep. So, you know, if I was able to sleep, I'm sure I would have not eaten so much. But, yeah, so I don't know. It's tricky. And then after that point on Monday night, I ate a full dinner, even though I knew it didn't sound good at that point. And that's when I think things really did switch into like a different gear for me. And now I would know that in the future, like that might be a good sign that things are like progressing more. But
yet not wanting to eat crops up a lot before that point.
Totally.
And women sort of go with that, like, oh, I can't eat, I'm in labor, but.
Right. And I think what was interesting was my partner again was like, no, you're going to eat this chicken dinner with mashed potatoes and broccoli. And I was like, it sounds really bad. And I'm glad he made me, though. I mean, I did end up throwing it up, but it was a valiant effort. And then from that point on, I knew, like, okay, I probably can't eat that, but I'm going to eat. I have to come up with something different then.
Yeah. I mean, you were amazing. It's okay to be choosy, although I don't think anything I offered you, you refused.
No.
She was the most willing person to keep herself going. But again, that's really rare. I don't know. Women get into this sort of wheel where they don't. And if you don't eat or drink for long enough, when you're using that many calories and working that hard, something seems to like click off in your brain and then you don't want to eat or drink at all. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite impossible for the uterus to work after days of that. Mm-hmm. It's just not a good situation.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's like a cultural thing or, you know, like that you don't eat in labor, or maybe it's wishful thinking, like,
I'm farther.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's really going to be soon and then I'll have a meal after or something, or I don't know. But I think I had that on my side, that it was so long that I thought it would never end, so I figured I better keep eating.
Well, in some ways, you know, we don't prepare other people.
Right.
People prepare themselves, but I don't think it's that horrifying to just put it out there to most people. I mean, whether it's your fifth baby or your first baby, it doesn't matter. That labor could be different. It could be longer than mm-hmm. you expect. And it doesn't mean you're in absolute misery the whole time.
Or it might.
You have no idea, but eating and drinking is just so crucial. And again, I just wanted to bring that up because it seems so basic, but yet it's a really easy thing to neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, man, I think you could really kick yourself for later. Because it's hard to recover from, you know, a lot of hours of depletion. And, you know, truly, those might be situations where then it becomes necessary to go somewhere where you can get an IV or whatever it is. Because your body just can't, you know, it can't do all that.
I don't think I could have.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't have done that long if I had been eating, like, granola bars or something for meals. And I think even the day that I had her, which was Tuesday, I'm pretty sure I had an egg breakfast that morning.
I'm sure you did.
Or something pretty substantial.
You were very dedicated. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is something I will never forget. And Margot can be the, like I said, poster child for sharing that with other women and, you know, being that person that understands too, that it's not really the most pleasant thing. But if you have that in your head beforehand, it certainly helps. And like she said, if you have a support system that gets that, from as simple as having food in the house, which believe it or not, some people really don't
right.
in labor.
Yeah, lots.
Yeah, and just maybe thinking ahead with ideas too, because you're not really loving the idea in labor. So
I think there was only, I'm having two memories pop up in my head. One was driving back to our house with me and my partner, like probably a month or two before having the baby. And it was one of many conversations where I said, you know, I probably won't be days long. Ha ha.
But if it is,
you know, I hope not. But if it is, you know, you have to feed me. Like, I was very serious about it. And it was very like,
oh, that's great.
Stern. And he really took that to heart. And then the only time, the other memory is that the only time during labor that I remember being like, ugh, no, like, I don't want that, was when my husband tried to feed me a spoonful of peanut butter or something. And he made the argument of like, no, you really have to. And like, I could see that he was fearful, sort of, or like afraid. Like, he was like, no, like, this is my job. You told me I have to do this. and like you have to eat, or you know, he said something that was convincing enough that I ate the disgusting spoonful of peanut butter. Yeah. I think I said like add some honey or something. It was just like the texture.
Yeah,
it wasn't even that I was unwilling to eat the peanut butter. It was just it needed some sprucing.
Yeah,
and so he went and I think added some honey, and I was like, and I need water after, and so he did that, and so I think that having that speech prepared and to not be like, oh, okay, sorry. You don't want the peanut butter.
Yeah, it's not for the faint of heart. No. I mean, it comes back to, again, I think like a relationship with your partner and our support team that, you know, you're taken seriously or you're not taken seriously, depending on the moment, you know, that they know you well enough that they're still trying to hold true to what they know you want. Because in the moment of labor, I mean, you don't even really have the words to form about much of this. So to have someone that isn't afraid to get yelled at or whatever it is, to just keep offering food.
Yeah.
Not even asking, just offering. That's always a good tip.
Yeah. And like, I don't know. Are we going like way too long here?
No. Feel free. This is your story.
I keep having more things crop up.
No, it's great. I don't have to listen to it all at once.
Sure.
Press pause and come
press
back.
Pause. Get a cup of tea. Rejoin us. I was just going to say that, you know, I think something I have learned for myself, I don't know if this is true for other people, but I think my husband, who sat through our class and has heard me blab for years, took it a little too seriously, the whole, like, no talking thing during labor.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, be quiet and, you know, all the things we say you should do to have an undisturbed birth. And I think he was afraid to ask questions. I don't know that he had questions to ask, but and I think he was afraid to talk too much to me. And I think I would have probably benefited a little bit from, like, him having a more, like, upfront conversation with me, like, at times being like, what can I do to, like, make this easier.
Right.
So I think that was an interesting thing. And I've told people, you know, clients of ours and people in our classes that, you know, if we were to have another baby, I think something I would do would be sort of to prepare like a list of things that sounded good to me as far as like comfort measures, which we talk about in our class. But I sort of took for granted that maybe he would come up with, or that I'd be able to come up with those ideas. And like you, what made me think of it was when you said it's like you don't really have the words to put together when you're actually in it. So that's something I think people might benefit from hearing, just like having a long list and then someone who's not afraid to like be careful, of course, not to like really mess your space up, but be like, hey, do you want to try this? You know, like we do.
Sure. And, I think that just shows too that birth is complex, that, you know, like when we talk about physiological birth, on one level, like it's simple, but we're not as simple as it can be. And when a birth takes a turn from not being super simple, then, there are changes you make to your own situation to ensure your own sanity and your own comfort, even if they may not be on like the rules of undisturbed birth, which is he was following the rules.
He was he's very good at following rules.
And most men are, and that's how their brains are working during the process. I mean, it's stereotypical, I know, but you know, that's why having a midwife or a friend there, because we're the feeling ones. We're the ones that are like feeling that you need a change in position often, but you know, some guys I'm sure do, but most are willing to stick to what they've been taught and the minute it deviates, but that's the lesson of birth, right? It's just a big deviation from what we've learned.
Yeah. And then the last thing, or at least what I think is the last thing, I'm not sure what made me think of it, but just saying again, how important I think it is to follow your intuition. You know, like I knew this, that women instinctively choose positions that work best.
Yeah.
And I was essentially like trapped on my hands and knees for like the entire time, or most like 80% of the time. And, but I remember thinking at one point, we've talked about this, and I think I even talked about it like immediately after, like, I felt like I needed to grab something and like hang from the ceiling, like a rope from the ceiling or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like some weird past life thing. I have no idea. But like I needed to do that and I didn't have anything like that set up. And it didn't like, I didn't feel like strongly enough about it that I insisted we like construct something or, you know, like, but.
Well, again, it's the words thing. You just felt it.
I felt it. I felt like. You know, and I think I did my best to kind of replicate that. But it was so interesting, I think, because what eventually, like, got her out was to be sort of pulling on a towel that my husband was holding the other end of, so in a sort of similar fashion, to give that, like, dangling sort of feeling in a sort of a squat, like a supported squat, essentially. So I just thought that was so interesting to, like, think... You know, I think it was that morning. I remember thinking it probably at, like, 8 in the morning. She was born at 4 in the afternoon. Like, oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
And so, just so people, like, I don't know. In that moment, I didn't think, oh, that's an intuitive, like, what I should do. Whereas I think if I were to have another baby and if I thought in my head, like, oh, it sounds really good to do this, I'd be like, oh, yeah,
yourself.
I'm going to do that right now.
Yeah. But that's the confidence, I think, and trust that, you know, I think a pretty small percentage of women even have the first time, and that even looks a million different ways. But, well, that's a great point because there are women all the time, no matter what baby it is, you know, more asking other people, like,
do you think
I should get in the pool? And that's fine too, but often they know the answer, but they think, oh, it's too early for the pool or it's too late for the pool. So yeah, to go with whatever's popping into your head, just go with it.
Even if it sounds like, or feels, I don't know, it felt like a, I don't know how to describe it other than like, it felt like a sort of fleeting thought. And I thought that like an intuitive sense would be like more demanding.
Go to the towel.
Yes, go find the towel. Some voice from above. That would have been nice. But, well, it sort of was. It was a friend on the phone.
Sure, it was a voice
so
from
it
above.
Did end up,
right,
you know, manifesting that way. But, so yeah, I guess that would be my advice. It's just if some little, like, whim even pops up, like, I need to eat a popsicle, or, like, I need to do this, like, you're not going to do, it's not going to hurt anything. And
sure.
Just to follow those, because it might be, you know, more important or more... helpful than it maybe seems. It might not be like this neon flashing light. It might just be like a, hey, you should go hang from something.
Sure. And who knows what purpose that serves. Mm-hmm. We don't know all the intricacies that are going on in the labor. We think we do sometimes.
Right.
But even if it's just that, you know, she wanted to rotate her head a tiny little bit and that gave her the opportunity. Who knows? We don't know. We don't know much.
So, yeah, I think that was interesting. Well, and then similarly right at the end, and it's in the birth story too, like I was pushing on my back for a while, which worked very well for the purposes at the time. And then I think I asked Maren, I was like, should I move? Like, should I? And I'm not sure. It's in the someday video that's the long version.
Oh, my
something like, should I get up and squat? And, you know, Maren did such a beautiful job of saying, whatever sounds good to you, you know, what do you think? And I think I did another contraction or two that way. And then I was like, yep, I'm getting up. And that's where the video starts, is like with me, like heaving my enormous pregnant body off the ground, like a leprechaun
awesome.
Or something. I don't know how I like moved that fast, but.
Pregnant laboring women can do amazing things.
I moved very quickly.
Yeah.
Quicker than I had in months, I think.
Yeah.
But I was like, yep, I'm going to do that towel thing again. Because that's going to... And they got her out.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Awesome.
And I don't know, again, why or we don't... And maybe it wouldn't... Maybe she would have come out just fine that way. But, yeah. If that felt right and... In that moment, it was more of the neon sign, like, yeah, get up.
Yeah, well, at that point, I think generally speaking, you just can feel a lot more, so your body can direct you. I mean, it is intuition, but it's also can be very clearly, like, where
physical.
You're feeling pressure, yeah.
Yeah.
So, right, and the labor might not be as obvious, But yeah, like we said, who knows why you'd pick one thing or over another. Mm-hmm. But I guess knowing your options too, you know, is a smart thing in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, many women don't in the sense that they just figure they'll know how to move.
Right.
But there's something to be said for just knowing what you can do.
Seeing when again a baby, what people do.
Exactly. And watching videos. And
trying out different positions around your house beforehand, I think is cool. And
yeah.
And then in the video you can see, I don't think I talked about it in the birth story, but it's something more that I've noticed, you know, in the months after. I thought it was neat that I, again, this wasn't even the neon light. It was like autopilot would be sort of how I describe it. But I was squatting to get her head out, like a full on crazy squat with like some crazy pushing. And if you notice in the video, I yell, "Out you go."
That's my favorite line.
Listen carefully. "Out you go." Which is hilarious and weird. But yeah, so I was in a full squat. And her head came out just like a little peek, and then it sort of oozed out between contractions. And then I think at that point I was on one knee and then one foot, so like a half squat. And then to get her whole head out, I sort of leaned forward. And they talk about that with breech babies too, sort right. of like this rotation around the baby's head. And you can see her head just sort of like bloop, like come right out with that rotation yeah. as I leaned far forward. So it's sort of cool to see the way that the position, like how my body just naturally moved that way, and then just to see how her head responded by coming out like that. It's just neat.
Yeah, that's so neat. And I think so many of the time women have what they need to do just that. So, you know, whether it's like a sticky shoulder mm-hmm. or a breech baby or this or that, you're really better off listening to yourself in most cases, because obviously, I mean, it's just so internal. Like, I know I felt that too. I've mm-hmm. felt shoulders rotating or being a little here or there, and your body just knows what to do if you're not looking to someone else to just tell you.
Right.
Because you wouldn't really know to tell somebody that.
Right. And it's interesting, too. I think I asked you, like, is it out? Is the head out? Which didn't really mean, is the head out? It was, the head's not out. Like, I knew. I was like, this doesn't, it didn't yeah. feel like it was out, you know? And it wasn't yet. And then I moved forward, and the head sort of plops out. But it's also interesting, too, again, back to, like, having the video to look at. I don't think I would have known that I had done that at all if I didn't have a video.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
my memory, like, my in-my-body memory of it is sort of hazier. It was more like I pushed really hard and she
well,
came
because
out.
It was a subtle movement, you know? I think
right.
back on, I don't have any recorded videos of my birth, mm-hmm. and I couldn't tell you the,
exactly
like,
what happened.
Slight little movements you make, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, but it is. It's brilliant, and we're only aware of them, like, again, with sort of the more complicated situations, you know, what we should instruct women to do. But
right.
yeah, in most cases you're feeling it. So it's just another reason to listen to yourself.
Yeah. It's another reason I'm so glad in this case, at least, that we have a video to sort of have those little subtle teaching points for people to be like, oh, like that's really neat. And to have this sort of play by play of like, that's what happened. And because most women, if they have an uncomplicated birth at home, and they don't have a video or whatever, like, they might not realize how amazing their bodies are to instruct them in that way. Sort
yeah.
of like the proof.
Yeah, for sure. For
I love
sure.
proof.
It is. It's all about the proof. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. We could talk for hours, so we'll cut it off for now. Maybe we'll do some other fun ones together. It's always nice to have someone to talk to on
yeah.
these. So be sure to check out Margo's series of podcasts as well, called Well Actually. They are on iTunes under Indie Birth. So just another series. And of course, check our indiebirth.com for new webinars and free consults and all that good stuff. Thanks so much for listening.